for joining us as we usher in the 9 days and we begin to commemorate this time of year of Avelis. It's a great way to do so by having a guest speaker like Rabbi Penner, who will get us into that mood and share some of his thoughts about the process and the steps of Avelis and how it pertains to the 3 weeks, the 9 days, and Tisha B'Av. So without further ado, I thank very much Rabbi Penner for joining us this evening and his family as well. And I'm sure everyone will enjoy very much.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Schechter. And a good chodesh Menachem Av. We should see Yeshuos in this chodesh. I have a lot of hakaras hatov to Rabbi Schechter for everything that he's doing out here in Woodmere. And my wife is a regular attendee several days a week. And at the morning shiurim for women, and Baruch Hashem, it's had a tremendous impact beyond the Woodmere community to the Queens community beyond. She should continue to have much hatzlacha, Rabbi Schechter, with all of your work here to be Marbitz Torah. I want to welcome my in-laws who are here, as well as my family, my wife and Chili. The shiur tonight, I was asked to dedicate the shiur, first of all, to the community of Berezhin, which was destroyed during the Second World War on Rosh Chodesh Av, as well as the Solomon family in Eretz Yisrael, the tragedy that occurred on Friday night. The neshamos should have an aliyah. We're going to talk about Avelus. Avelus is a topic that we rarely speak about. It's something, of course, that is a part of life. We're a little afraid to learn the laws of Avelus because we shouldn't need it. But Avelus, the laws of Avelus, the process of Avelus is as much a part of the Torah as every other part of the Torah. And the death is a part of life. And it's a natural part of life. And we're going to look tonight, perhaps in a way that you haven't seen before, to look at the stages of Avelus, to look at what's accomplished at each stage of Avelus, to understand how that relates to the 3 weeks, the 9 days, to Tisha B'Av, and perhaps get you to think about not only Avelus, but life after death in a way that you may not have thought of before. I warn you that this will raise many questions in your mind. We're not going to discuss things that any of us can fully understand, but hopefully begin to scratch the surface of a topic to help us understand the brilliance of the halachic system, and perhaps to make our own mourning, whenever it is that we have to be in mourning, whether it be chas v'shalom for a family member, or it be for the Beis HaMikdash, to help us appreciate that process in a much deeper way. At my wedding, at the Chassan's Tish, so I spoke about the fact that Chazal, I don't know if you remember this, Abba, but it was a while ago already, I spoke about the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was credited with establishing two different seven-day periods. The 7 days of Sheva Brachas and the 7 days of Avelus, the 7 days of Shiva. And I didn't really want to make a joke at my own Chassan's Tish and this and that, but obviously one can try to figure out what the connection is between sitting Shiva and getting married. But it is rather bizarre that Moshe Rabbeinu would establish these two things. On the simplest level, what we're being told here is that when we encounter a time of tremendous rabbinic guidance, there are periods during the year where we are relatively, because we're always bound by halacha, every single step, every single move when we get dressed, every single move is bound by halacha. But there certainly are periods in our lives and periods in the Jewish calendar where there's even more halacha imposed upon us. Someone who's not familiar with the halachic system, who doesn't live a life of halacha, would feel very overwhelmed by anything, by getting up in the morning. But somehow we've gotten used to the regular halachos that apply on a regular day. But then there are times in our lives and times in the year, the 7 days of Avelus, Pesach, which some people compare to the 7 days of Avelus, there are times where we are inundated with halachic ideas. We're inundated with minhagim. What is that all about? It's clear that halacha is there for us as a guide. The simpler it would have been for us to figure out what to do, how to act, how to be by ourselves, the less we would need Chazal, the less we would need all of these minhagim and texts to guide us. The more difficult a period is to navigate, the less we could have figured this out by ourselves, the more Chazal and the Torah itself are going to step in and say, here's how you do it. Whatever the message of Pesach is, whatever we're supposed to get out of Pesach, it's not an easy thing to experience. So there has to be a complete upheaval in our lives, and there needs to be all of these halachos to get us to that place. The experience of mourning, the experience of getting married, are experiences that are so overwhelming, we don't know what we're supposed to think, and what we're supposed to be, and how we're supposed to go through that process. So our tradition is there to guide us with texts, with minhagim, with a very set way of going through these times in our life that if left to our own devices, we wouldn't be able to manage. If one compares the way that a person, a traditional Jew, goes through the mourning process compared to the way that it is experienced by most people in the world, one sees how lucky we are to have this guidance. The idea of focusing, and we know this, Chazal don't need the stamp of approval of modern psychology, but we know and we understand that the most healthy way to go through a period of grief is to face the grief right away, is to experience that grief, is to hear the thud of the earth on the coffin. The more sanitized the experience is, the more difficult it is to ultimately move on. We are so lucky not to face tragedy, but to have Chazal there when we do face tragedy, so that we're told that for the first 7 days, we don't go back to work. What is it like to not have halacha? What is it like to wonder which is the right day to show up in the office? What is it like to show up in the office the day after a funeral or the day before a funeral when the person has already passed away? Chazal, the Kadosh Baruch Hu himself, through periods of intense halacha, guide us through the most difficult times. And difficult can be painful, and difficult can be wonderful, and yet we can lose an opportunity. Difficult to navigate. The periods in our life that are most difficult to navigate, we have halacha, we have texts. We don't make up what we say. We're told what to say. We're given the set seder of what to do so that we'll get it right. I'd like to look in that vein, I'd like to look at the stages of Avelus. What is it? What is the Jewish way to go through these stages? And to try to understand the inner logic of what this process is about. If you look on the sheets, to look at the chart, which is the most important thing to have in front of you, there's a grid, either on the back or the front, wherever you're holding it, which outlines the stages that we go through when we lose someone. Starts with the moment of death. Yetzias HaNeshama. We know, of course, that death, as the Gesher HaChaim of Tukachinsky tells us, the Gesher HaChaim, one of the most classic Sfarim on Avelus and life after death, we believe in the conservation of matter, so to speak. Death is simply a parting of body and soul. Nothing is lost. Everything is there that was there before. It's just no longer together. We speak of Yetzias HaNeshama. The Neshama is not a physical thing that's actually in the body. We can't really speak of the Neshama as being in the body. Really, the better way to call it is Shayach to the body. Connected to the body, so to speak. It's not a physical thing like Casper the ghost that it's inside you, so to speak. But there's a connection, there's a shaychus between the body and the soul. That connection is broken at the moment of death, and they're both there in exactly the way that they were, and in fact, even as the body disintegrates, all of the matter that was once the body is still there in the grave, is still there in the world. And even as the body itself comes apart, death is not an end whatsoever. Death is a separation. A separation of body and soul, a separation of the pieces of the body to their component parts. We then have the time between death and burial called aninut, aninus. A very, very strange thing for anyone who has had the gun to go through it. Aninus is most known for the fact that one is putter from positive mitzvos. And it is bizarre for people who go through it. Bizarre. You've been making a bracha before you eat for many, many years. You could be 70, 80 years old and mourning someone. You've been making a bracha for 70 or 80 years before you eat, and now you're told, no brachos. There are some aspects of mourning. There are some aspects of mourning itself, although we don't allow the mourning to get in the way of our preparation of the funeral. But the most salient feature at that moment, the thing that people notice the most, suddenly no positive mitzvos, no davening, no brachos. We then proceed to burial, to the kavura, which of course really ends one stage, one half of what we're doing. The burial ends our focus on the mace. The burial is the last thing that we will do for the body of the person. Until the time of the burial, all of our focus is on the deceased person. It's not on ourselves. One of the reasons why we do not do mitzvos at that time is because the Ribono Shel Olam says, don't worry about me, don't focus on me, focus on the deceased. Put all of your attention on the person. At burial, as we'll see, by the end of burial, the focus suddenly shifts from being malave, from escorting the person to their final place, to the mourning period itself for the individual. There's a very stark, as we'll see, a very stark change at the moment when you come to the funeral and when you're now leaving the funeral. We may not be familiar, but the reality is that within halacha, there is a distinction between the first 3 days of Shiva and the rest of Shiva. Shlosha yomim lebechi. Our rabbis tell us that the first 3 days are supposed to be most intense, and really, in a perfect scenario, we really shouldn't be visiting except the people we're closest with. We shouldn't be visiting other people during these 3 days. It is an intense period of crying. Reality sets in, we got to pay a shiva call, I can't go at the end of the week, I go at the beginning of the week. This concept of the first 3 days has pretty much been lost. It's a little more the first day. Who pays a shiva call the first day if you're not going for the Mincha Ma'ariv? But really that's supposed to even extend further, all things being equal. Shlosha yamim lebechi, 3 days of intense crying. Intense restrictions limited to the home. The next 4 days is what classically we call shiva. Still intense restrictions, limited to the home. And then, of course, Shloshim, the 30-day period. Noticeable restrictions, right? We all are familiar with the restrictions of Shiva. Very, very intense mourning, sitting on the floor. Very, very intense period. Shloshim, it's a little bit lifted. It's actually mostly lifted. We leave the home. But there is noticeable avelos. What's some of the noticeable avelos of Shloshim? As we enter the 9 days, right? Shaving, wearing clean clothes, bathing. It's almost like we take the mourning on the road with us. We leave the home, as we'll talk about. We enter, we go back to the world, but we clearly take it with us. We don't feel comfortable. We don't look like ourselves. That period goes for 30 days. And then, when one is mourning for a parent, one has an additional 11 months. Yud Beis Chodesh, an additional 11 months of mourning, which is basically about not doing things that will push off the sense of sadness. It's not an active mourning. It's not that we're doing things. It's not that we're neglecting ourselves. But we don't go to a wedding. We don't listen to live music. We don't do things that will push away the memories actively. We let the memories be. The mourner refrains from joyous activities. And then finally, Yahrzeit. Minor restrictions and commemorations on the day every single year. There's a custom not to go to a wedding on the day of a parent's Yahrzeit. There is a custom to fast, which is unfortunately not as well perhaps kept as it could be. Many people have substituted a little Kiddush. You should ask your local Orthodox rabbi about that, but it seems the original custom at least was certainly to fast on the day of the Yahrzeit, and that occurs every single year. Now, because we're about to enter, we are entering in the 9 days, it pays to stop for a moment and to notice what Rabbi Soloveitchik would point out very often, that the period that the Ashkenazic community holds, which we call the 3 weeks, right, going from the 17th of Tammuz until today, and the period of the 9 days, going from Rosh Chodesh Av until Tisha B'Av, and the day of Tisha B'Av, very much parallels some of these particular stages. The 3 weeks roughly correspond, the 3 weeks correspond to the 12 months. That's why technically Rabbi Soloveitchik used to hold, Rabbi Schechter holds, that one can shave during the 3 weeks, just as one can shave during the 12 months of mourning. We now, tonight, enter into a period that is eerily similar to Shloshim. Restrictions on bathing, restrictions on washing clothing, restrictions on shaving. Yes, for many of you, the thing that we will miss the most is meat. And that is a particular issue having to do with the Beit HaMikdash and Korbanot. But on many levels, the 9 days really represents that period of Shloshim. Tisha B'Av is the closest thing one does to Shiva without sitting Shiva. We are sort of sitting Shiva for the Beit HaMikdash. It's interesting, of course, that whereas when a person passes away, we go from the most intense mourning, we go from Shiva to Shloshim to Yud Bet Chodesh, whereas we don't feel the pain of the Beis HaMikdash. So we don't start with the most intense mourning. We have to actually build up the mourning. We start with the 3 weeks, which is like the 12 months. We move to the 9 days. Now we're entering into Shloshim for the Beis HaMikdash. And then, if we still have to, next Tuesday, we'll actually move up to Shiva, sitting Shiva for the Beis HaMikdash. What does this halachic system accomplish? Now we're going to theorize. But I want to suggest 4 different ways of understanding this progression, especially from Shiva to Shloshim to Yud Beis Chodesh. What is happening? Why does this work so well? You know, you speak to people, no one wants to sit Shiva. You speak to people after Shiva, and it's amazingly effective. People say, wow, in fact, we know so many cases where Shiva is cut off by a Yom Tov. And although people on the one hand are glad to get up and go to Yom Tov, they feel like they missed something. Who wants to sit Shiva? We do want, we don't want to have the loss, but when we do want to sit Shiva. What is accomplished psychologically, otherwise, what is accomplished when we move from Shiva to Shloshim to Yud Beis Chodesh? The first thing that is accomplished is that we are gradually drawn away from the mourning. We are gradually drawn away from the mourning, and the simplest thing that Chazal do is simply give us time frames when it is appropriate to be in this place and when it is appropriate to move on. What Chazal accomplish, what happens with Shiva, Shiva allows us to completely focus on the deceased for a full week. And that week, on the one hand, feels like a day, and it feels like 3 months. It feels like a day because one is busy constantly, and one is constantly talking about the mace, and it just flies by. And it feels like months of time. Psychologically, it's like months of time. After a successful Shiva, a person doesn't feel 6 days removed from the death of their relative. They feel months removed. It doesn't mean that they've forgotten them. It doesn't mean they're not tragically sad. But they feel months removed from the actual moment, from the place that they were a few days before. It is an incredible transformation that occurs. an incredible transformation. Shiva, on the one hand, gives people something to do. It keeps them busy during these times. And by the way, it's so important to know, for those who haven't sat Shiva, the most difficult moment after the moment of death and perhaps the moment of Kavura is the day after Shiva. Friends, that's an important day to be there for your friends and for your relatives. It's after Shiva when for the first time I'm now struck by the loneliness. One of the fascinating things that Shiva does is it gets the person through that incredibly difficult time. There's so many people in their lives. But yet the change on that eighth day is often very, very dramatic. That's when a good friend, that's when a family member should give a call. That day, the next day, the day afterwards. If you think about it, Chazal in many ways help us to go from stage to stage. The idea of the shura at the kavura itself. How long am I supposed to stay? The idea that at the end of the funeral, there's something still you have to do that actually brings you away from the grave. Personally, when I'm doing a funeral, when I'm doing a burial, I always give the family a few moments to just stand there by the grave. Everyone else is, I don't know why it's so hard after so many funerals to figure out how to line up, but everybody else is confused where they're supposed to stand. So it gives the avelim an opportunity to stand there for just a minute. From the moment of death, when a person is relieved of their obligation to do mitzvos and they can focus fully on the deceased, through the funeral, where we have an active role all the way through the burial, we can say we've done everything that we were supposed to do for this person, and now it's time to move on. It's interesting that the community sends a powerful message. I remember hearing this many years ago from Rabbi Maurice Lamb, Zichrono Livracha, how when we come to the funeral represents the confusion that we all feel. It's just the way it works out. But everyone comes to the grave, they park their cars on the road, and everyone kind of comes to the grave in a different place. And when we leave the funeral, we say to the mourners, here's a straight line now to go through. We've got you covered now. There was confusion, there was chaos, there was a release from mitzvos. Now the halacha, the community takes over again and says, okay, now walk between us. This is walk this way. Walk exactly through these two lines. The halacha tells us when it's time to get up. What a powerful thing. It is always so difficult as a rabbi to pick up a whole family from Shiva on the morning of Shiva and to try to explain to them that no one expects everyone to be in the same place. That just because we're getting up now doesn't mean that everyone is ready exactly today to get up. Some were ready 2 days ago. Some won't be ready for another 2 weeks. But the halacha moves us from stage to stage. And it is, doesn't need my blessing, but it is a very, very powerful system. It doesn't mean that people who sit Shiva and who follow the guidelines of halacha don't have complicated grief. There are many, many things that can complicate grief, and very normal people have complicated grief. But for the vast majority of people, the process is one that leaves them at the end of 12 months having felt on the one hand that they did everything they were supposed to do, and they have been weaned away from those most intense moments into a better place. Rabbi Lamb himself explained that beyond the moving away from the intensity of the mourning, the process of Avelus served to reintegrate the mourner into society. That the process of experiencing death is one of, as it's called in psychology, disintegration and then reintegration into society. At the moment of death, explained Rabbi Lamb, at the moment of death, a person feels as separated from the community as they could possibly feel. For anyone who has experienced this, whether they experienced themselves or you've experienced it as a close friend, a family member, the moment of death, one has a feeling that they are totally separated from the community. Totally separated. You know why? Because no one can understand what I'm feeling right now. And it's true. And by the way, it's important for people who are there, who are supporting them, to realize that the person who is bereaved feels like no one can understand them. And the worst thing that we can say sometimes is that we do understand them, or we've had a similar experience. It's never similar. The mourner wants to be alone. Yes, they need people to help get this done and get that done, and they feel supported. It's good to have the rabbi there or the chevra kadisha there because I don't want to do the wrong thing for my relative. But on the whole, at the moment of death, the person wants to be alone because no one really can say the right thing. There's a complete breakdown with society. That breakdown is there for another reason. Or it's not there for another. It actually is felt in another way because nobody knows what to say to you. Nobody knows what to say to you after you've experienced the loss of a close. There is nothing to say. There's a distance that's been created. Yesterday we could just strike up a conversation, and today it's that experience that people have when they're, we'll talk about that in a moment, when you come in the funeral home and you're passing by the person, and it's not a very well-known halacha that one is not supposed to try to console a person before the burial. The entire custom that we have today that you come into a funeral home and everyone immediately, the family is there sitting on in a side room, and everyone passes in front of them and tries to talk to them, seems to be against the halacha. And there's very good reason why the halacha doesn't like this. Why does it occur? It occurs because people feel a need to know that someone should know they were at the funeral. If you got up and you say a parak of Tehillim, they knew you were at the funeral. But otherwise, you slept out, you took off the whole morning, you could be sitting in the crowd, no one's going to even know you were there. So by saying something and passing in front of them, and it's the same thing on the way out of the funeral itself. You want to make sure to give the person a hug. At least they should know that you came. But it's really not proper in halacha. We don't give console. We don't try to console people when meso muto lefanav. When a person doesn't want it. There are times where as a shul rabbi, I had to insist that we not do this at the funeral home. Because it was too hard. It was a tragic death. And people didn't want to have to face people and accept consolation and be seen. The feeling of losing a close relative is a feeling of tremendous isolation. It is the disintegration of the community. Here's where Rabbi Lamb pointed out how the community steps back in as the person goes through that line. It's such a powerful scene. What a powerful moment in our Jewish lives when we each stand on a side and people walk between us. And we're literally almost holding up the people as they walk through. It's the beginning of the reintegration process. That you're literally thrust as the mourner, you're thrust into the crowd. You wanted until that point to be alone. You're sobbing at the grave. And now the rabbi says it's time. And you turn around and literally you leave that moment of isolation and you walk through the crowd. You walk into the crowd, into the community. And that's what happens over Shiva. What a powerful thing Shiva is. Have you ever had someone who you're close with, for whatever reason, you couldn't pay a Shiva call? And then you saw them after the Shiva. What do you say to rebuild that relationship? Not that they're insulted. You just couldn't be there. When you went to pay the Shiva call, when you saw them for the first time after the death at a Shiva call, it was natural and normal. You were able to once again rebuild that bridge. Outside of the Shiva home, it's so much more difficult. What do I say the first time I see them? They've been through so much and I wasn't there with them. What is Shiva if not the reintegration of the Avel into the community? The entire community comes to the person's home. one after another after another. It has to start slowly. The first 3 days, it's too much. It's just the closest people who should be there the first 3 days. And then the rest of the community comes. The process of Shiva is where the person is welcomed in, and in a successful Shiva, the person feels perhaps more welcome than they felt even before the person passed away. Because the reality is that that period of isolation could have started 4 years earlier when the person had a stroke. And for 4 years, people didn't really know how and where to find the person and what to do. And now at the Shiva home, the person is reintegrated into the community on some level. Because, of course, the community is not in a Shiva home, right? People come for a moment and they're with you, but then they leave and they go back to life. The community is in shul. The community is at a simcha. The community is at work. How does the avel make that move where he or she goes from being completely surrounded in the morning to being able to come back into the real community out there? Well, that's what Shloshim is. In Shloshim, we take the Avelus with us. We don't leave it behind. We're not ready for that. We leave the home. We say, okay, it's enough. You have to come back to the real community. The real community is outside of your home. But take it with you. You're not going to look right. You're not going to feel right. And when people see you, they're going to realize there's something wrong. And that's going to help your integration back into the community. And then there's the 12 months where you're almost there, but it would be disrespectful to a parent to completely push away that mourning. So we go completely back into life, except for the simchas. And then it's only at the end of the 12 months that a person becomes fully integrated back into the community. So the first way perhaps to look at these stages is that they're moving the person in a healthy way, psychologically, religiously, away from that moment of tragedy. The second is to recognize that there's a disintegration of the person's community life. At that moment, they want to be totally alone, and now suddenly they're helped back to become a regular part of the community. That's number two. Number three. If you look beneath the chart, you have a piece that appears in several places, a very, very profound idea from the Altar of Kelm. This is found in the works of one of his students in the Sefer Chochma Umusar. Betach shama mimeni yedidia et asher shamati b'shem ha'admor ha'saba mikelm. Hu amar ki inyan ha'avelus, hu rak lihios nosei ba'ol im ha'niftar. It's a famous idea from the Altar of Kelm that says that the reason why we mourn is not because the person is gone. Because he says, Ein lo makom l'chayra, really we shouldn't mourn. Va'adrab, chas v'sholom yesh lachshosh lehipuch. Ki im yitztar ha'odam sheyechzor lo eim chas v'sholom. Halo ein lacha pegia b'chvod Hashem chas v'sholom yoyser mizeh. What am I mourning? I'm mourning that I don't have a parent. I have a parent with a capital P. I'm mourning that this person is no longer here. Well, don't we know that they're in a better place? What is it actually that we're mourning? Ein zos, he says, two lines down, ki im ha'odam mitzuve ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, haynu ba'avas habrios, shiye kamocha mamish. Haynu ichud ha'nefashos. We're supposed to be at one, not just with the bodies of our relatives, but their souls. And what are their souls going through after death? Says the Altar of Kelm. It's a little bit of a scary thought. But the reason why we mourn is because we feel the pain of our relative who is going through hell. And because the experience of going through hell is most painful at first, we mourn most intensely at first. And because it becomes easier over time, the avelos is lifted over time as the year goes on. It's a very, very difficult idea. On the back, you have a piece we're not going to go through inside, but I don't want to present such grand ideas without bringing you anything you could read or go back to. It's a piece from the Sefer Gesher Achayim of Rav Yechiel Michal Tokuchinsky, early in the 1900s, who, based on Kabbalistic sources and Midrashic sources, points out that the soul goes through many stages upon death. And as the soul struggles to make its way into the next world, we struggle with the soul. The easiest way to understand this, the easiest way to understand the way he describes Gehenim, is something that is also described in a certain way by Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan and others. It's not a place with fire. It's not, there's no guy with a pitchfork. It's very simple. Hell is having the most unbelievable world in front of you. A world of complete spiritual pleasure and not wanting to be there. The Gesher HaChaim, the Kabbalah, presents a very, very simple, rational understanding of what happens when we die. And the basic idea is, we're still conscious, we're still ourselves. But we can't be living in this world anymore. The basic idea is simply that our soul leaves our body, and for the first time we're able to hear and see and feel without our bodies, without our brains. How would I feel if I left my body right now? Waiting for me, for the few times that I did benching right, for the few Shemona Esrays that I got right, for the few times I gave tzedakah, waiting for me is this unbelievable world of reward. It's a spiritual world where I get to be spiritual all day. I get to have Yom Kippur all the time. And I'm like, I don't want Yom Kippur. All I want is a steak. And the extent to which I've trained myself in this world to appreciate what's there, to the extent that I can learn to make Yom Kippur my favorite day of the year, I'll find the next world rather rewarding. But to the extent that I find the physical pleasures of this world, which will no longer be available to me, how painful it will be. The Gesher HaChaim points out that there are no less than 7 different stages. A person who dies at a regular time, whatever that means, not an unexpected, not a tragic death, whatever that means, the soul already begins to leave the body before they die. And as strange as this sounds, I have many times as a rabbi encountered people who were a few days before death who were telling me things about the next world. The moment of death is a moment of unbelievable confusion. And we too enter into a state of aninos, a state of tremendous confusion. How confusing it would be if I was looking at my body from outside of my body. What's going to be with me? What's going to be with my body? Chazal tell us how tragic it is, unfortunately, when a person's death, when a person's burial is delayed. Because like anybody else, we would be very concerned, am I going to be buried properly? What's going to be with my body? There's a certain relief, Chazal tell us, that the soul undergoes, the soul feels, just as we feel when the burial is over. Perhaps the moment of greatest relief for an individual is when they get back and they sit down in the Shiva home for the first time. I have, as a rabbi, many, many times broken up people on the road after the, right? Everybody is back on the road after the service in the cemetery, right? They're all hugging, and I'm sorry if anybody here is a Kohen. Happy for you, you're a Kohen. You know what I'm talking about. But everybody kind of stands there on the road, and Nebuch, the people who are parked four cars back, they can't get out. But I'm not worried about the people parked four things back. I'm worried about the Avelim. Because if you've ever been through this, you know that the moment that you sit down back at home is the moment of tremendous relief and release of tension. And I don't want an Avel from my shul or an Avel from my family, Chas V'Shalom. I don't want them to wait another 10 minutes so everybody who wanted to give them a hug and a kiss could do that, to delay that moment of relief that I'm back. It's something you can feel. You could feel the tension in the room and how it's broken when they're finally sitting down with that bagel and that drink and whatever it is. And we get that experience very much in the same way that the soul does. The first three days are the most difficult for the soul, and they are the most difficult for us, and we cry. Why are they so difficult for the soul? The Kabbalah tells us they're difficult for the soul because the body has not yet started to decompose, you'll excuse me, and the soul still thinks that maybe it can still go back. And the soul is completely tied to this world and believes that, who knows, maybe I could get back in. That's the most difficult time of judgment and of pain for the soul, is the few days that are right afterwards. That is the most difficult time. It's very interesting that we have this custom to learn Mishnayos for a person, and it used to be a yard site, that was a big deal. We used to learn it for the first year. Now, Baruch Hashem, we learn it for the Shloshim, right? To tell everybody, oh, we're going to make a Siyum Mishnayos for the Shloshim. When do they learn the Mishnayos? Come on, when do they learn the Mishnayos? The day before the Shloshim. That's wonderful. That's not when the person needs it the most. If you sign up for Mishnayos at a Shiva, start learning right away. Because that's when the soul is going through the most difficult time. It's during the Shiva, during the first 3 days, during the first 7 days. I know that the mourners themselves, for different reasons, are not allowed to study Torah. But if you're going and you sign up, you can study Torah. That's when we should be learning. That's when we're trying to relieve the soul. We're trying to do all these wonderful things so the soul doesn't have as difficult a time somehow. The Kabbalah tells us that from the third day until the seventh day, the soul goes back and forth from the cemetery to the house. For 3 days, the soul really can't be with the family as much as it would like to be. It is so obsessed with the fact that its body is there. At day four, for the second half of the Avelus, the soul is released and is able to now move back and forth from the cemetery to the Shiva home. And our Avelus is lightened up just a little bit. But the soul is still completely down here and can't get over the fact that it died and can't get over the fact that it can't be with its family. Where would we be for the first 7 days? We just want to be back with our loved ones. We just want to be back in our body. And we're completely focused here. And behind us is this incredible world of pleasure. But we don't want any of it. Chazal tell us that at the end of 7 days, the soul is able to begin to test out and to see what's beyond this world. It's released a little further from being bound down here. And our Avelus is a little bit relieved. And we step out of the Shiva home a little way because we're Nosei Ba'olim Chaveru, we feel terrible, but we know that at the end of the Shiva, our relative is in a little bit of a better place, has moved on a little bit. And then we're told that at the 30th day, the soul begins to really check out what's there in the next world. It has one eye on everything going down here. It can't really appreciate it. We keep saying Kaddish to make sure that they have more and more Zechuyos. And then at the end of the year, the soul is comfortable in Gan Eden. The soul is out of this experience called Gehenim, not this place called Gehenim, but this experience called Gehenim. And then we stop mourning because we're no longer sad for our relative. Is there anything that can make the process go faster? Well, we believe that doing things on behalf of the person's neshama can make it go faster. And we also believe that a person can prepare for that experience down here. And there are two ways to prepare to leave the world. One is to enjoy the spiritual, and the second is to be denied the physical. We believe that a person who undergoes a tremendous difficult illness, a person who wants to be dead, has a much easier time when it's actually time to move on. When a person's body has nothing left, when a person would gladly say, look at the body in the grave and say, who wanted to be in there at this point? When a person was ravaged by illness and sickness for so many years, we believe that it's not just like it's a schus for the neshama, it just means that it's easier to make that separation. All of us naturally, as we age, have less of a desire for the physical. We begin to prepare for a time when we won't need all of that. That's the third way, and it raises a lot of thoughts and questions, and I'm sorry that I can't answer them. I'll tell you what I know, or what Chazal seemed to tell us, or what I seem to understand from Chazal. So the stages are, and we'll get to one unbelievable fourth stage in just a moment, that it moves us away from the pain. It allows us to reintegrate into life. Avelus allows us to reintegrate into the community because there's a disintegration at the moment of death, and then we finally make our way back in. There's an idea from the Altar of Kelm and from the Gesher HaChaim of Tukachinsky that we're actually mourning for the person who's going through difficult separation from this world. And as it gets easier for the person, we lighten up on our avelus. But then it occurred to me that there's something else. And it comes from taking a number of the theories that we've suggested and putting them together. What I would suggest is that our reintegration, please listen closely, our reintegration into the community is mirrored by our relatives' integration into the world to come. That exactly what we are doing at each one of the stages in Avelus, of trying to make our way back to where we will be, to get ourselves back, is exactly what the soul of the person is doing in trying to get themselves accustomed to be in their new home in Olam Haba. Listen closely. The most salient feature of death is the patur from mitzvos. It's a fascinating thing. When we have to share bad news with somebody, we say, so-and-so was nifter. What does it mean with it was nifter? Nifter. That's what we say. Don't say they died. We say they were nifter. What does nifter mean? Could you imagine if you said it this way? Oh, so-and-so was so tragic, he's now putter in mitzvos. That's what we're saying. She is no longer chayav in mitzvos. That is the most salient feature of death. And the fact is, it is. I mean, that is. We are here to serve the Ribono Shel Olam, and when we die, we can no longer serve him down here. What is the most salient feature of aninos? The patur from mitzvos. Do you know what happens between death and burial? We are completely at one with our relative. We are both confused. We are both shaken. We are both putter from mitzvos. We are both, so to speak, out of this world. There's nobody else. They've been taken from the community. We've been taken from the community. And we actually descend for a moment into death with our relative. We are as close to our relative as we will ever be again. That's aninos. at the cemetery, we part ways for the first time. We spend every moment of our thought before the burial, everything, we are completely consumed by our relative. The Ribbono Shel Olam tells us that we can never become as consumed in a human relationship. Never is there a time where we can be so consumed in a human relationship that we are putter from serving God. But during those few days or few hours, God says, I want you to completely be focused on your relative. You are both putter and mitzvos. You both have only one thing in mind, and that is to get to the burial. At that moment when you turn around from the grave is the first moment where the two souls, so to speak, separate a little bit. And it's very painful. During the Shiva, nobody is ready to move on. The mace is completely consumed with its death, and the chayim are completely consumed with the death. They are completely bound to one another. For the first 3 days, there's not even anything else. The mace is completely focused on its body, and the people at home are completely focused on the death. It's only on the fourth day that the mace begins to notice there's something else outside the death. The mace begins to roam, the soul begins to roam, the person begins to slowly accept people in from the community. The next 30 days, a very powerful thing happens. Both the soul, both the living and the dead, begin to test the waters in the place that they will be at the end of the year. The soul begins to check out the world to come, but is constantly coming back. The person begins to check out the community again, but is constantly reminded by their clothes and their beard and the fact that they haven't taken a good shower. They're on the one hand, they are very focused on the death, but for those 30 days, each of them begins to check out where they're going to go. At the end of the 30 days, both are pretty much have, the soul already is beginning to get used to the next world, and the person is beginning to get next to the community, but there's always something that's pulling them back to each other. And then at the end of the year, there's that day, that first yahrzeit, the kiss and the goodbye. And with the miraculous system that the Kadosh Baruch Hu has set up for our souls and for our bodies and our lives, both have now been integrated into the places that they will spend the rest of their life. Starting from Aninus, where one is as close to any human being, any other soul that one could possibly be, to the end of the 12 months, when both have settled now and both have returned to where they're going to be. It's not over. Because Chazal tell us that once a year on the yahrzeit, there is a reconnection. We, as the living, do certain things in honor of the person. We remember them. We bring back the memories. We bring back the doing things for them. They, the soul, becomes once again aware of what's going on in the world and all the people down here. There's that rendezvous again. But then it's already, both sides are able to easily move back to where they're going to be. So four different understandings of the brilliance, and these are four of so many more, how the process allows us to move away from the pain, to reintegrate into society, to mourn with our relative as they go through the difficult stages, and perhaps most amazingly, to literally mirror for the soul what it's supposed to do. When a person is in the next world, they have no Torah. There are no Torah and mitzvos. It is difficult for a person to know when to move on from Shiv, from 3 days to 7 days to Shloshim to Yud Beit Chodesh. And I would make a suggestion that perhaps when we move from stage to stage, we're not simply marking the stages. We're actually giving guidance to our deceased relative's soul as to where they should be now. We have the Torah. We have the guidance. We have Chazal. We know that the 3 days are up, and the 4 days are up, and the 30 days are up, and the year is up. And it's very possible that we actually lead the way for the soul of our confused relative, our confused loved one, who doesn't know. When we move on, halachically, they're able to move on as well. Of course, Avelus is not simple. People aren't ready suddenly on the seventh day. There's no magic thing that goes off. People in this room are certainly mourning. There's certainly individuals here who are mourning or have mourned. It's not a neat process. All Chazal could do, human nature is still human nature, all Chazal could do was to give us a guide, give us a system, and try to help us through, for so many reasons, through this process. The last source, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us that Amar Rabbi Yochanan Eser Masaos Nasa Shechina Mikroi, that the Shechina left the Beis Hamikdash in 10 stages. At the end of this shir, there should be no doubt that the process of the Shechina leaving the Beis Hamikdash, the Shechina leaving Yerushalayim, is there to mimic or mimics the way that the soul leaves the body. In stages, one after another, after another, after another. And the Gemara explains how the Shechina waited and waited and finally moved away. Of course, the Shechina didn't end up in Gan Eden. The Shechina is still waiting to reunite with us. The process of going through Avelos backwards is the process of reconnecting with the Ribono Shel Olam. It's the process, and this is one thing that we really do feel. Somehow we feel more connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as these days proceed. It's not simply a time of mourning, it's a time of yearning, it's a time of wanting to be back, because Avelus is about being with, holding on to the soul of something that has gone. So during the 3 weeks, we're in the 12 months, and we feel that sort of connection to want the Shechina, just as during the year of Avelus, we feel the pain, but we go about our normal lives. Comes tonight, we go back into Shloshim. And in Shloshim, the mourning is so intense that we feel very much more the loss of the person and the presence of the person. We feel at the same time the loss of the Shechina, and yet we feel more holy, because the process of the Shiva and the Shloshim is to be with the soul. And in this case, we're not moving, we're not getting further away from the soul, we're getting closer to the soul. So for the 3 weeks, we're in the 12 months. And then in the 9 days, we're at Shloshim. We're back to Shloshim. We're back to the time where we were so close with the Ribono Shel Olam, that we had the connection that a person has to his loved one in Shloshim. And Tisha B'Av, such a strange day, a day of feeling tremendous, intense mourning, and yet, in a certain sense, the presence of the Ribono Shel Olam. But the tragedy of Tisha B'Av, with this I'll end, the tragedy of Tisha B'Av is that when we get there, when we get to the morning of Tisha B'Av, when we're now ready, we feel a loss, we feel like we want to be with the Ribono Shel Olam, we're back in Shiva, we want to be there with the Ribono Shel Olam, but Kiviyochel, the Ribono Shel Olam's not there. Tisha B'Av is a day which is, we're told, that our prayers are not heard in the same way, that the presence of God is not felt in the same way. The tragedy of Tisha B'Av is understood and felt most painfully by understanding that in theory, Tisha B'Av should be and will be the day where we are reuniting with the Ribono Shel Olam. It will be that at some point. The process of going from Yud Beis Chodesh to Shloshim and the Shiva, of going backwards, is getting closer, just as we were closer with that soul. It's almost there. We want to be back in Aninus with the Ribono Shel Olam, where our souls are intertwined and we're exactly in the same place out of this world. And we get to Tisha B'Av and we're ready. But as it says in Shir HaShirim, the beloved is knocked and knocked, and by the time we get to answer the door, he's no longer there. The tragedy of Tisha B'Av is that we are primed to want to once again be not just with the Ribono Shel Olam, but to be with him in Yerushalayim. And the tragedy, that when we've finally woken up at the end of 3 weeks, he's gone. He's not there, so to speak. It's a day where we're told in Eicha that our tefillos are stopped, so to speak. The gates are no longer open on that day. It's an attempt for a reunion. It's an attempt to get back and feel the soul of the Ribono Shel Olam. But it's a tragic day because it's not there for us. Perhaps will come a time when we are able to prepare for Tisha B'Av in a more intense way, where the ga'aguim, where the feelings that we have on Tisha B'Av, the feelings that we have that we want to be with the Ribono Shel Olam, will come not on that day. That's too late. By the time it gets to Tisha B'Av, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I've already left the door by then. Someday we'll get to the point where we feel those feelings of Tisha B'Av throughout the year, the yearnings to be with the Ribono Shel Olam, the yearnings to be back in Yerushalayim. And at that point, we'll be able to have the reconnection. The time of Mashiach is a time where we'll reconnect with the Ribono Shel Olam, and the time when the souls of those that we've lost will be reconnected with, it is a time of reintegration where the world will once again be what it should be. May we see this speedily in our days.
What? How about? Here. Yeah.